In this episode of Skeptico, Dr. Marilyn Schlitz discusses her approach to controversial science research.
I don't necessarily believe in all the things that I study. I think that what I believe is that anything that is an aspect of human experience is valid to study, and that I think there are some areas that have greater potential for breakthrough.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico. We're joined today by Dr. Marilyn Schlitz, Vice President of Research at the Institute of Noetic Sciences and well-known Psi researcher. You may know Dr. Schlitz from her many TV and radio appearances and from her book of 2 years ago, Consciousness and Healing, An Integral Approach to Mind-Body Medicine. We spoke recently at her office in Petaluma, California. We talked briefly about the Skeptico podcast and then got into the body of the interview. So I thought we'd just jump right into this.
Can you give me just a little bit of background on, you know, what you're trying to do more generally and broadly?
Sure. I've been interested in this topic for a while. What I really want to do is try and create a dialogue, a real dialogue, because so much of this debate, if you will, or the mudslinging really that just goes on kind of one way, gets left with these sound clips when they don't know where to go with it. And I guess I never knew where to go with it. I never knew where to go with objections that people raised on someone's research methodology or the results. And I think there's a lot of other people that don't necessarily know what the follow-up is to that.
It's fun. I did a postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford, and I did a couple things, but one thing I did was a discourse analysis of the skeptic-proponent debate in parapsychology, and so I just love this territory.
And now here's the rest of the interview with Dr. Marilyn Schlitz. Dr. Schlitz, as an introduction, I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about your training and experience as a researcher, as a scientist.
I got interested in this whole field and the idea that one could do science on inner experience and anomalies that sort of don't fit within the conventional model back when I was an undergrad at Wayne State University. And that was about a time when, you know, Thomas Kuhn's book on the structure of scientific revolution had come out. And there was a lot of enthusiasm for thinking about paradigms and the notion that paradigms shift, and that, in fact, if you look at the history of science, that our models of reality have shifted, you know, consistently, repeatedly. You know, what we take to be absolutely certain has changed. And that really intrigued me. I started doing research using psychology as the model, and began, I stumbled into a book by Edgar Mitchell, The Apollo 14 Astronaut, Psychic Exploration. And that book really excited me, the notion that there were serious scientists doing serious research on a topic that lay outside of the, you know, the orthodoxy, as it were, and therefore meant possibility of breakthrough and new discovery. So that really started me on my path. I started doing experimental parapsychology, so really learning a lot about research design from the laboratory perspective and statistics and probability and, you know, things that I think parapsychologists are very compulsive about in terms of research design because they have to be. And then at some point I got interested in thinking about, you know, consciousness as something more than the product of a laboratory study and you know, how could you bring rigor like you can from a laboratory into understanding experience more generally. And so I ended up getting my PhD in anthropology, and in particular medical anthropology, where I've been studying cross-cultural healing practices. And so today I combine things. I'm both an experimental researcher interested in sort of the furthest reaches of consciousness, and I'm also a field researcher who's really interested in tracking, you know, what do these experiences mean for people in their lives.
Great, great. So, I mean, your title and some of your public appearances as a director of research are obviously coordinating a lot of research efforts, but it sounds like you haven't lost that kind of frontline researcher hat, if you will, and you're still out there conducting research, and you certainly have a lot of that in your past.
Well, my my jobs, I'm Vice President for Research and Education at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and here I have the opportunity to oversee a number of projects and programs, and I'm also a senior scientist at California Pacific Medical Center, where I actually administer a grant through the National Institutes of Health to study the potential impact of prayer and the knowledge of receiving distant prayer on wound healing in patients who are undergoing reconstructive surgery. And so I have, you know, a broad set of interests, and today I'm really very interested and excited about sort of what is popping up, what is this conversation that you're stimulating here about, you know, when science begins to meet these things like spirituality or religion, what kind of new ideas and, you know, and what kind of resistance occur as a result of that. So my anthropology hat is on today.
Excellent. Excellent. And that's something I wanted to talk about, because one thing you've done that is somewhat unique is it seems like you've really made an effort to reach out to the skeptical community in a number of ways. And as a matter of fact, I think you would probably even pull back a little bit from that whole skeptical community, research community dichotomy. Can you tell us a little bit about how you've tried to bridge that gap and maybe what some of the results have been?
Well, you know, I go back to the Greek definition of skeptic, and a skeptic was really the open-minded person, and the dogmatic person was the one who had all the answers. And so I really do see myself as an open-minded skeptic, somebody who is interested in investigating. I'm in the tradition of William James as a radical empiricist. You know, I think anything that is experienced by people is appropriate to turn the lens of science toward, and that we can learn more and engage more deeply in any domain. But I think that it's also really appropriate to use, you know, proper protocols and to offer that lens of discernment that I think science offers. And so I am somebody who is a truth seeker more than I am a proponent or a skeptic. You know, I really see myself as somebody who's trying to, you know, push our understanding of who we are and what we're capable of being, but doing it with extremely rigorous intention and care, and, you know, the methodologies are impeccable. And so one way of achieving that, I think, is to work in partnership with people who have views that are different than your own. Maybe I'm missing something in my protocol that somebody like Richard Wiseman, who is a card-carrying member of the skeptical community, you know, can see that I can't. And so that to me seems like an opportunity rather than something to be feared. So I embrace, you know, open engagement on many topics between people who share different worldviews.
Didn't I also hear you mention in a talk that you had identified a doctoral student that had launched some criticism of your work, and you actually reached out and engaged that person and said, great, why don't you come to our laboratory? You've raised some interesting points. Let's see how those kind of pan out.
Yeah, we were able to get some funding to build the lab here at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. It's a, you know, we got a 2,000-pound electromagnetically shielded room, and we got lots of, you know, acoustic tiles, and we got all kinds of things that would allow us to build a very careful lab. And in that process of building it, we thought, okay, let's go to the people who have raised some concerns about previous protocols and methodologies and see, you know, if they'll help us. And that's what we did. We had both Stefan Schmidt, who was this dissertation person. He was at the University of Freiburg. And he came in and stayed with us for, I don't know, a couple months, actually, and really helped us to set everything up. Richard Wiseman, who's also a close colleague and worked with us here, came over and helped us, you know, figure out whether we had any noise leakage or acoustic leakage. You know, could one person hear another person from a different room? And so I just think it's helpful. I don't find anything, you know, other than that. The problem comes when you get the dogmatists or the debunkers, people who know for sure, you know, because I don't think I know for sure. I'm really open to the fact that, you know, the universe is full of many mysteries, and that there are aspects of my own experience that, you know, don't necessarily fit in the Newtonian box precisely. And yet I find the Newtonian box a particularly compelling one. I just came back from the space launch, the NASA shuttle launch, and it was a momentous display of how Newtonian physics and that mastery of the physical world works. You know, I'm a big fan of that. So I think sometimes people polarize our positions in ways that aren't really adequate to the subtleties of what we're studying.
Well, that's great. And your openness is certainly refreshing. I don't know that it's always shared on both sides of the debate, but that's okay. And to that point, you've now mentioned Dr. Richard Wiseman a couple times. Let's play an audio clip from him in an interview he recently did with BFM Radio in New Zealand. And as you know, Dr. Wiseman is professor of the public understanding of psychology in the UK and has been a collaborator of yours, and nonetheless has still been a critic sometimes. Let's play that clip, and then if I could, I'd like to get your response.
I think most of the evidence is that, you know, people have difficult lives some of the time, and it's nice to think there is a magical solution. So if, unfortunately, they've lost someone close to them, it's nice to think that person's still around. If they're ill, it's nice to think someone can come along and essentially wave a magic wand and make them better. So it's perfectly understandable why people believe, and some of the time those beliefs may be good for them. It may be a kind of placebo effect. But of course, in terms of science, we're trying to understand what's really going on, and often the evidence does crumble.
Okay. Could you maybe give us a little bit of the background on your collaboration with Dr. Wiseman and then address some of the broader issues that he's raising?
Well, I just want to jump in and say I completely agree with what he said. I think that it is really true that it is more satisfying to live in a worldview where things are friendly and that you can have some consolation when things are hurting. I also think it is the role of science to help discriminate. And I think that what he said is that oftentimes the evidence crumbles. And I think that's also true in terms of the ontology of whether this is something that violates cause and effect as we understand it from the conventional model. So when Richard Wiseman says these things, I just agree. And when I hear him say often, I don't hear that as always. So I don't hear him dismissing a lot of the research that's been done that has, you know, impeccable quality to it. I hear him saying that there's a tremendous amount of nonsense that fills the airwaves and the print waves and wherever else you want to look. I completely concur with that.
Perhaps you're right. Perhaps you're right. And there is a lot of noise out there. What the problem I have with it, though, is the context that it's in is not quite so gracious and open and sharing and spirit of discovery. It's a lot of times it's from defending a pre-established position. And the other part of the objection I have to it from an intellectual perspective is it really, when we're talking as intelligent, academic people who are serious about research, is it really surprising that there's a lot of people that are perpetrating fraud, cons, or people who are deluding themselves? I mean, is there any story there? So when we're talking about the research that you're doing in a lab that's you've spent tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars to set up, experiments that you've trained for years to conduct, and the same kind of criticisms are leveled on those experiments, kind of with the same broad brush is, there's as any other phenomena that someone might report just from their own experience. And I think the brush gets just washed over everything.
Well, I will say that, you know, there are times when it's painful to be dismissed just out of, you know, pocket because somebody completely dismisses the premise. Without actually taking time to study the data or to appreciate the thoughtfulness that's gone into it or, you know, the fact that there are, you know, teams of people who are very well educated, as you say, and trained and skilled and who are intelligent enough to, you know, be able to make some decisions about where they want to, you know, direct their careers and, you know, the kinds of questions they want to be able to ask. So, you know, I think that's true that there are times when there's a prejudice. But where people really get animated is in the unofficial domains of after hours. And either they're admitting to having had some kind of experience that they don't want to admit to publicly, or they just get irrational. And I've had people spitting in my face because they were so angry that I thought that the idea that we could actually do a science on parapsychology was a legitimate question. you know, spitting at me. So, I mean, I've seen it both ways. And just if you can choose how you position yourself, I think to come with as much integrity, as much openness, as much clarity about the fact that we simply don't know the answers to a lot of the questions that we're looking into.
You were talking about some of the personal, some of the attacks that do get more personal. And to that end, I wanted to play another clip for you that does get more personal and a little less professional, and yet it's from a very professional guy. This is a clip from Dr. Stephen Novella, who is an academic neurologist at Yale and president of the New England Skeptical Society. A few months ago, you appeared on his show, his podcast, where I thought you were not only quite gracious, but quite convincing. Yet a few weeks later, he had some things to say. Let me play that clip and get your response.
Have I also found, and this is definitely true of, again, Marilyn Schlitz, who we had on our show recently, that they really do have a different worldview. And for them, the reason why this little tiny anomaly is important is because if it's real, that means the paranormal universe is real. Regardless of how important or big or useful or practical the effect is, it means that all of their belief systems in healing energy, in spirituality, in everything else is justified. It makes everything real to them. And of course, there is a lot of overlap. But again, like Marilyn, who you know, was talking to us about ESP, and he may have a PhD, maybe a serious researcher, but she also believes in a lot of kooky things, a whole suite of kooky things, including, you know, like energy healing. And it's not a coincidence. And yet at the same time, she dismissed our skepticism as what she called an a priori, meaning that, well, we just come from a different paradigm, and that's the only difference between us.
Okay, you're laughing. What would be your response to Dr. Novella's points?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's different levels. So as I said, I did this discourse analysis of skeptic-proponent debate, and so if I looked at that discourse and I would say, okay, there's some markers of just, you know, a dismissal, an attempt to undermine me where he says, you know, maybe she has a PhD, maybe she's a serious scientist. So he's automatically bracketing some doubt around my credentials or qualities. So that I find funny because it's just, it's interesting. It's so predictable that you would find those kind of markers in a discourse like that. It's so stylized. There's a way in which the debate is, you know, ritualized almost. And there's certain things you can predict that are going to come up when a skeptic tries to, you know, attack another position. And I would say in that debate right there that you played, that's an example of kind of trying to take an extreme position and to polarize us. So this issue of worldview. I do believe that probably the main challenge we're going to face as a civilization in the 21st century is our ability to tolerate a multiplicity of worldviews. I think that there are different epistemologies and different ontologies. Epistemology, how we know reality. Ontology, what is our model of reality? There are different, there are thousands of them. There are, you know, dominant forms, but there are many, you know, subdominant forms of worldview. And I think that one of the things that, you know, is going to be important to us as, you know, able citizens of 21st century world is that we're going to have to be respectful and tolerant of difference. Now, that isn't to say that I don't value the discernment and discrimination that comes through the scientific method. And I use it, and I do practice science, and I do believe that there is value in taking that kind of crisp lens that cuts through. And at the same time, I'm very respectful of the fact that if I, as an anthropologist, look at the belief systems of the vast majority of people on this planet, they include, not exclude, the idea that there can be some communication between two people at a distance. The idea that my beliefs or my intentions influence my capacity to heal. You know, these are widespread beliefs across the world and across the United States, and interestingly enough, they occur more frequently amongst the higher educated than the lower educated. So this isn't just some kind of delusional folk belief, but it does appear that there's widespread support for a model of reality that says there are these ways of interconnecting. And then if you go a step deeper and you say, okay, if we want to take this from a scientific point of view, we now have lots of leads coming from, you know, quantum mechanics, for example, that the world is more complicated than we had thought, given the Newtonian model. And so there is support for these different ontologies or worldviews. So, and then the third issue that came out of that little clip for me was this idea she believes in. I don't necessarily believe in all the things that I study. I think that what I believe is that anything that is an aspect of human experience is valid to study, and that I think there are some areas that have greater potential for breakthrough in terms of our knowledge of the universe, our knowledge of ourselves, our knowledge of our relationships to each other. And that's why I'm intrigued by, you know, some of the data that come from parapsychology or complementary and alternative medicine or, you know, biophysics even. I think there's just a tremendous amount of, you know, interesting deconstruction points for the whole notion that we have all the answers to how reality operates.
What strikes me is just how unscientific his discourse is. I mean, just purely objectively, as objective as I can be or anyone can be, where is the science in dismissing someone else's work because they're quote-unquote kooky beliefs? Who's to judge? I mean, especially as you point out, when we take beliefs that are common across cultures and are shared by the majority of the people on the planet, as a scientist, I would think you would be curious to say, okay, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, but that's something that deserves our attention.
Well, and show me the data. You know, show me the data. An open-minded person would say, show me the data. Instead of dismissing by character assassination rather than by actually looking at the integrity of, you know, what the claims are.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the hard things for me about these personal attacks is that they're like negative political ads that no matter how dirty they may be, when folks resort to them, they do have an impact because there's plenty of folks out there who are listening and say, gee, this person sounds like a serious, academically oriented person. Dr. Novella, he teaches at Yale, has all the credentials. If he's going to resort to this kind of smear, even though I might not like it, there must be something to it. And then it kind of stops there, and no one even needs to look a step further and say, wait, let's really look at the data and see what it says.
Well, I think there's a distinction between somebody who's highly intelligent and somebody who's emotionally intelligent, like rationally, intellectually intelligent versus emotionally intelligent. And I think oftentimes when people's buttons get pushed, it becomes a very emotional, you know, limbic response that is old stuff, and it isn't necessarily our, you know, higher level functioning. And so it's interesting when you hear somebody who's obviously highly educated, highly intelligent, that has to go for almost an ad hominem attack. Yeah, you know, I'm not really offended by it. I have to say I'm more amused than offended, because if that's the degree to which he wants to turn his lens of skepticism on me, then I can't take that very seriously. I mean, I'm much more interested in a conversation with somebody like Richard Wiseman, who is actually willing to get on the ground and do the research and engage together in some serious inquiry. You know, that to me is a lot more credible position than somebody who just wants to be an armchair skeptic.
Right. Okay, well, let's leave that then, all that kind of unpleasantness there aside for a minute. And what I want to talk about next is something that I think is a little intriguing, and that's you have seemed to have moved lately, over the last few years, into the mind-body medicine area. And I was wondering, what parallels do you see in the way that the mind-body medicine movement or understanding has progressed and has become much more mainstream, I think, over the last 20 years? It's just amazing.
No question.
And how do you relate or see the parallels between that and psi research or spirituality research in general? What do you think on there?
I think that is absolutely true, that, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, anybody interested in alternative or complementary medicine was considered to be a granola-eating hippie on the mountains of Northern California, and not now the front page news of the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and an entire office at the, or a center at the National Institutes of Health. So the world has changed. It's amazing to me. But I think that, you know, my main critique of what has happened happened with integrative medicine is that the economics have driven it more than a real deep appreciation for creating a new model of healing. And I think that's our opportunity now, is that there's been enough work done, there's enough, you know, economic support for these ideas. It's certainly in the mainstream. How do we go deeper, and how do we build a new model of medicine that's deeply respectful of the fact that there are different approaches to healing? You know, and that's that issue of respect. That goes back to a lot of the topics we've talked about. I think there needs to be a humility that comes when you say, I don't know it all, and there are different ways of approaching this problem, that arrogant, you know, sort of assumptions don't accommodate. You know, it's, if you come from a position where you have all the answers and you know exactly what is true and what isn't, then that doesn't leave much opportunity for the fact that, you know, medicine today is in a serious crisis, and, you know, it needs to have all kinds of good ideas thrown at it in order to build something better. So, you know, for me, I think that out of crisis can come transformation, and it's possible that we can, you know, begin to rebuild the structure of, you know, what we think about as the healthcare system of America by taking into consideration these alternative viewpoints.
Great. I think that's very well said. Finally, Marilyn, can you tell us a little bit about what research you're most excited about right now, and what we might want to keep an eye out for?
I'm in a transition period right now. I'm completing a big clinical trial on, it's a placebo study looking at distant healing and the knowledge of distant healing for wound recovery. And I'm interested potentially in doing another project with that same kind of outcome measure, looking at hypnosis and suggestion. And so instead of distant healing, I'm kind of turning the lens to what happens when your anesthesiologist actually whispers in your ear healing intentions. Does that help? You know, really to try and see if we can't get the signal to noise ratio up there. And then I'm most, you know, from an anthropological point of view, I'm very, very interested in tracking what I'm going to call the second axial age, following Carl Jaspers' work on the first axial age, where, you know, there was a time in history, about a 600-year period, where most of the world's major religions and truth systems sprang up. You had Hinduism, Buddhism, Confucianism, Taoism, you had Greek philosophy. You had a couple of others in there. And so there was a moment when, in kind of the evolution of our social being, we became more aware of a lot of different kinds of approaches to this mind-body or mind-body-spirit connection. And I think that right now we're living in another time of enormous kind of worldview change. And as I said before, I don't think it's going to be a worldview shift to one new model of, like, this is the truth. I actually think the new worldview is one that's got to be accommodating of a multiplicity of perspectives. But I'm really interested in tracking what is this emerging new worldview that combines lay spirituality, actually an avoidance of organized religion, kind of a moving away from that, but an upspringing of lay spirituality, an imbued spirituality, kind of nature and that, with then science and how science is being used to story a new model. And so I'm interested as an anthropologist in looking at that. And then the third thing I'm very excited about right now is I'm creating a series of educational materials, transformational learning materials for health professionals that I hope will incorporate some of these principles of consciousness and healing and alternative worldviews and the discernment and discrimination that comes from an evidence base, and bringing those together in a way that I think hasn't been offered so far. So that's what's up for me.
Terrific. And for folks who are interested in staying on top of your work, or maybe even getting involved or supporting some of the research you do, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, noetic.org is our website. There's all kinds of really great stuff on that website. If you go into the research section of the website right away, you can do online games that Dr. Dean Radin has developed. We've created what we call the Halls of Healing, where you can actually go in and test your own intuitive healing abilities in a game kind of format with a research project underneath it. And we have all kinds of areas that are resource sections. So spontaneous remission is a whole area. We're really growing right now the area of contemplative mind and meditation as it relates to changes in neurophysiology, the whole new area of neuroscience as it relates to contemplative mind. And so I guess my role, if I have to be, you know, defined as anything, it's a bridge maker. And I'm interested in bridging science and spirituality. I'm interested in bridging inner and outer, you know, and I'm interested in bridging different cultures and worldviews in a way that I think will be fertile to what is emerging as a new way of understanding ourselves.
Great. Wonderful.
So thank you for asking all these questions and for, you know, creating a forum where, you know, all the sides can be heard. I appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you very much for joining us and for taking the time and sharing all your thoughts.
Okay, well, I look forward to hearing it.
Well, many thanks to Dr. Schlitz for joining us on the show. If you'd like more information about Dr. Schlitz's research, you can visit the Skeptico website. That's skeptiko.com, and look for the links in our show notes. You'll also find links for the audio clips we played. They were from the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast. While you're at the Skeptico website, consider dropping me a note. Let me know how you like the show so far, how we can make it better, and who else you'd like to hear from, or any other comments you might have. Don't forget to let us know if you have any special talents that you'd like to apply towards helping produce the show. And finally, don't forget to tell your friends about Skeptico and write some good reviews for us on iTunes. Thanks for joining us, and bye for now.